You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now,
Wyman's
here
never
are your hosts,
this happy to see
Jake
me.
Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Dave Wyman popping in. Wyman and Bob coming up in about an hour to say hi to Bumpus. Bumpus, actually in studio. You have a ways to drive in here. Thank you for making the trip and hanging out with us.
No problem. Thanks for letting me crash the party.
Not to brag, but I did bring mini cinnamon rolls in for Curtis's birthday, so hopefully hopefully that made the trip worth it. Like,
yeah.
It's an exhausting drive, but for a single mini cinnamon roll,
I did have one. I wish I could warm it up. I like to warm them up just a little bit, but no, thank you. It did make it worth it.
I do what I can. Now, there is an NFL draft coming up in a month. I don't know if you knew that. Pretty big deal. I don't think any of us are expecting the Seahawks to do anything on day one. But that's why these Seahawks draft prospect profiles that Jake's been putting together are specifically with guys who could be available to the Seahawks at pick number 56 overall in the second round. That's when they're going to be on the board for the first time. Now, if I were to ask you, Bump, or you, Curtis, do you think the Seahawks are going to trade down? Yeah, I think all of us would say,
probably.
Sure, they need more picks, but these are guys that are going to make that decision pretty difficult because they are very, very tempting, and that continues with North Carolina wide receiver De'Ami Brown.
This is Jake and Stacy's off-season profile. A look at the key free agents, potential draft picks, and extension candidates for the Hawks championship run.
Let's go!
Draft profile.
We know the Seahawks are potentially going to need a wide receiver number three bump, and this could be him. De'Ami Brown, a wide receiver from Charlotte, North Carolina. 6'1", 185, not the biggest dude, but also got some pretty good size. He came out of high school as a four-star recruit, stayed in his home state, though, and played for the University of North Carolina. He chose them over offers from some pretty good schools, pretty good programs: Alabama, Michigan, Ohio State, Virginia Tech. Started 6 games as a true freshman. By his senior season, though, he was starting every single game and was a first-team All-ACC. He led the ACC with 1,099 receiving yards, which ranked 6th nationally. Here's what Jake has to say.
Now, let me tell you about a receiver option that I think could be very, very successful for the Seahawks if this player was to come down to 56 overall, and that would be De'Ami Brown out of the University of North Carolina. At 6 foot, 195 pounds, he really turned some heads with his pro day, running a 4.4 40 and then jumping a 35.5-inch vertical. Now, De'Ami Brown is a player that played a lot of snaps for the Tar Heels, and he's a player that I think isn't necessarily going to be a number one elite receiver in this league. But if you talk about the Seahawks and how he would fit in, he doesn't need to be the number one receiver. You've got DK Metcalf for that. You just signed Tyler Lockett to a massive extension here to be your second receiver, 1A, 1B, so to speak. But to legitimately upgrade that third receiver option and to make this offense and take it into another sphere, I think a guy like De'Ami Brown would be perfect for the Seattle Seahawks. Former four-star recruit and all-state receiver out of North Carolina, he contributed early as a freshman, but took his game to the next level in 2019, where he earned 13 All-ACC honors. He ranked 9th in the country with 20.3 yards per reception. That year, he had 51 receptions for a little over 1,000 yards, and he tied the school record with 12 receiving touchdowns in 13 starts. Now, that production didn't stop just there. Brown was again dynamic in 2020, being named to third-team Associated Press All-American and first-team All-ACC after leading the Tar Heels in receiving 55 receptions, close to 1,100 yards, and 20 yards average per reception, and 8 touchdowns and 11 starts. Brown, he has the size, he has the speed, he has the ball skills, and the route running ability to be a great contributor and playmaker in the NFL. The positives about De'Ami Brown, in my mind, is that he's a consistent home run threat and was that for the Tar Heels. He averaged, get this, 20-plus yards per catch over the last 100 grabs. He's a plus route runner. He can run every route in the route tree. He tracks the ball very well over his shoulder, and he shows the ability to win 50-50 jump balls. So you talk about the dynamic between DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett. You add Dyami Brown into the mix, he can play that role that David Moore did in terms of being a deep threat, but he can be even more dynamic. He's a guy that I believe defenses would have to respect over the top and really have to pay attention to, which would allow DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett to have more room to work. Now, the negatives about Dyami Brown, you could see him potentially be selected in the late first round, early second round, but the reasons why he may potentially fall even farther than that and fall down to the Seattle Seahawks at 56 is because the negative aspects are his drop rate is concerning to me. He has a high level of drops, and they're really just unforced errors on Dyami Brown when you watch his film. Too many easy catches dropped. You've seen that with all-time greats before, so it's nothing that you should be shy of or shy away from the talent, but that is something that is concerning. And I would say that at this stage, he is a very talented physical receiver, but he needs to show a better sense of how to uncover himself in tight coverage. That's not necessarily new to him or new to college receivers coming into the NFL level, but I would like to see that be better, more refined, and more polished. But overall, guys, I think Dyami Brown would make a ton of sense for the Seattle Seahawks. He would be a player. If they were to stay at 56 and make that selection, he would make a ton of sense. And I think that this offense, with that type of selection, that type of upgrade at your third receiver slot, where you have DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Dyami Brown, Gerald Everett, Chris Carson, I really think that you have a group for Russell Wilson where there really is no excuses to not be a top five offense in this league.
Now, Bump, I'm curious what you think, not just about Dyami Brown as a wide receiver option for Seattle at pick 56 overall on day two of the draft, but maybe more importantly, whether or not they need to do that.
I think they do. I think Dyami could be what they hope Philip Dorsett would be, a downfield threat. They kind of have the same style of play. And this dude is all about the big plays. Yeah, three catches last year over 50 yards, one catch, 87 yards. Against the then number 10 Miami, 167 yards against UVA, 240 yards. I mean, this guy can straight out play football. I agree with Jake when it comes to his drops. There are some drops that are kind of suspect. Like, you're too good to drop that football. If you were a redshirt freshman and the lights are big, then I kind of get it. But I think he's worth rolling the dice on. Now, will he be there? I don't know. I think this draft is full of talented receivers. If he's there, you take a look, you might get him. But I'm going to predict that he might not be there just because he's that good.
Is there any wide receiver options? I should have warned you about this. Is there any wide receiver options you've been kind of hoping the Seahawks will take?
Man, the first 15, I just been looking at, but I just don't think they're going to be there. Yeah. Receivers are a hot commodity right now. As much as the NFL throws the football, everyone's going to be looking for wide receivers. But, I mean, there's guys like Kadarius Toney at Florida, Rashad Bateman in Minnesota, I believe he's at. You got Devontae Smith, obviously Alabama, who's not going to be there.
Right.
You got guys in the back and like, Elijah Moore, that Ole Miss, but those guys ain't going to be there.
Right,
you know, so you're going to have to find a diamond in the rough, and hopefully Dyami gets overlooked and the Hawks can pick him up.
See, this is why I think the departure of David Moore is so underrated. We didn't really talk about it a ton. Obviously, we focused on it because we knew wide receiver three would potentially have to be a spot you're filling. I've been assuming, well, maybe Gerald Everett takes off. Mm-hmm. Maybe you get him as your third wide receiver effectively on the team. You still need depth there, though, because I'm looking and I'm seeing Tyler Lockett. All right, awesome. DK Metcalf, clearly a great receiver. Those are your 1-2 guys. What's going to happen when teams know exactly what to do to stop them? You can't get the run game going, and you need someone else. You're looking at Freddie Swain, who doesn't have a ton of experience. Promising, not a ton of experience. John Ursua, who for some reason hasn't been able to stay on that active roster. I'm worried about the gap there, and there is a big one.
Yeah, there is a gap. I think Freddie Swain is capable. I think eventually he will be ready to go. He knows every wide receiver spot, and they try to get him the ball. They gave him a jet sweep. They throw screens to him. So they see something in that guy. But competition is everything. If you can bring in another fast receiver, I think you'll be good to go. But you're right. Gerald Everett, he can put his hand in the dirt. He can play in the slot. Mm-hmm. He plays on the outside. He might be the most versatile guy on this offense right now when it comes to pass catching.
Well, and it seems like the Seahawks, a team that's focused on saving money where they can, would probably be hoping that a tight end cheaper than a receiver can be that guy. I'm sure they're looking at Colby Parkinson, looking at Gerald Everett, saying, oh, it would be pretty great if those two could work out as pass catchers.
Look at my boy John Urzua. Man, I've been waiting. I watched
him
preseason.
Why hasn't he been out there,
I don't
man.
Know. So that's where I'm like, it has to be something right in the classroom maybe, or little things on the field, because we see the talent, but they know the day-to-day. So there's something going on that we don't see that doesn't allow them to trust him yet.
Four catches for 100 yards in his first preseason with Seattle, and then you didn't really see him at all. They kept him on the practice squad. They've kept him around. They've tried to take other teams from signing him, but he hasn't been a part of the active roster, which means, to me, they felt like Freddie Swain would be better. They felt like Penny Hart was better. I mean, either it's a toss-up for them or there's something that they wanted Urzua to keep looking. But I'm telling you, when we mention John Urzua, and I know you see it when you're hosting, that text line blows up.
It blows up. But good news is they're keeping him around.
Right.
So he's not doing enough, but he's doing enough for them to be like, look, we don't want anyone else to get this guy.
All right, that has been our Seahawks draft prospect profile. This one on North Carolina wide receiver Dyami Brown. Both Bump and I saying, you know what? A third wide receiver is going to be a need for this team, but the Seahawks, who are a little cash strapped, they could use a pick in the draft to get a wide receiver. Bump would be very okay with that, but they might also look to save some money and hope that one of those receivers they have can work out as a great pass catcher. Maybe get Chris Carson in there to use as a pass catcher a little more, too. Let's jump into some NFL headlines. I'm already so bothered by this news story. You know what? Jake's out today. Him and Curtis do a lot that annoy me, Bump. But one of them is anytime we mention anything about jersey numbers, they talk about it endlessly. We could, for the next 20 minutes, talk about jersey numbers if Jake was here, and it would just never stop.
It'd be the greatest radio this station has ever heard.
Bump joining us today, and he'll be in with us next week. And I was thinking, finally someone on my side. Finally an adult in the room. Nope, Bump's in here ready to go because he was also very excited at the news that the NFL appears likely to approve changes for player jersey numbers for the 2021 season. That means it starts now. So let the jersey number discourse begin. What makes you guys so excited about this?
I mean, jersey numbers mean everything to a player, right? Like, that's your identity.
But you're specifically excited about single digits on a DB or linebacker.
Or running back or wide
receiver.
Why?
Because you see it in college all the time, and it looks really cool. And why wouldn't you want that in the pros? Reggie Bush, his career would have turned out infinitely different. This is science. Okay. Had the NFL allowed him to wear number 5 in New Orleans rather than 25.
When's the last receiver in college to win the Biletnikoff who wore number 80-something? Single digits. The ballers wear the single digits. Even in high school, ballers wear the single digits. Unless you go to a school, I coached at Snohomish High School, and for some reason, all their ballers wore the 20-somethings at the receiver spot. Drove me crazy. But at each level, leading up to the NFL, all the baller skill guys wear the single digits. So now you're asking them to go to the NFL and almost change their identity. They're like, what is this? CeeDee Lamb in number 88 just didn't look good to me. You know what I mean? So I like that these guys have the options to keep their numbers. Now, if a quarterback doesn't have it, or I guess a kicker who's been there, but it's nice that they can continue their legacy with a certain number.
Totally fair. Now, this is my follow-up question for both of you. What's a jersey rule that you hate to see broken?
As far as numbers.
This is jersey number discourse.
Jersey number discourse. I don't care.
Like, people were...
Wear whatever you want to.
Okay.
Wear whatever makes you feel
good. So you
good.
Aren't someone that's like, I don't want to see a defensive end in the 40s.
No.
And that one, I don't like that. I mean, Carlos Dunlap at 43, that's a weird number for D lineman. You see it probably once every about 10, 15 years in college where a quarterback wears number 20 or a number in the 20s. I don't like that at all.
Mm-mm.
That looks gross. Bernie Kosar, probably the most famous. Him and Doug Flutie. I think Flutie wore 22 at Boston College. Those are probably the two most famous, and it never looked right.
Well, Congratulations for both of you. I've never been happier for anyone in my life.
Appreciate it.
I know I'm alone here. I know that listeners are like, Stacey, what are you talking about? You can't have this person wearing fullback numbers, but I just...
No, you got a texter to 425 says, Stacey, I'm with you.
Thank
I think
you.
It's a guy thing. Stupid.
Thank you, 425.
I never respected the 425.
Okay, sure. Moving on, the Seattle Seahawks have re-signed Demaryius Randle. Now, there's an added twist to this. He will be moved to cornerback. We've been talking about depth at that position, how it's probably the shallowest position, the thinnest position for Seattle right now. They need some help there. Is Demaryius Randle the answer?
He is a guy that's going to provide depth. Now, we're talking upstairs. If we're thinking about Randle,
right,
he's going to
provide
depth. We'll move him over here, get him some reps. If I'm Randle, I'm thinking, cool, I got another opportunity. I'm going to seize the moment, turn some heads. They're not expecting much from me, so I'm going to go out there and ball. He's not the answer. But I'm glad he's there.
Part
Give the kid
of the
another
solution.
Shot.
Right. Yeah. If nothing else, you've got some guys there. You don't have to turn to, for instance, a guy that's only played at safety to help on the outside because you don't know what else to do.
Yeah.
Or you don't have to turn to Ugo Amadi, your regular nickel guy, and say, hey, can you be outside corner for us right now? Although Brady Henderson of ESPN points out that helping make the case for a smaller cornerback, DJ Reed. He says, don't forget that he emerged for Seattle on the outside last season despite not having prototypical size, and that's absolutely true. Are you expecting a big season from DJ Reed? Because when we were talking about this, Jake and I, and he was like, man, you got to beat out DJ Reed. I was like, wait, what? Am I penciling in DJ Reed as a starter right now?
Yep, pencil him in.
All right.
Believe in the
maybe
kid.
Maybe Sharpie.
Sharpie.
Virginia Sharpie, but for DJ Reed. There you go. Next story here. Now, this is a player I personally am very excited about. The player that I am most curious about outside of where the quarterbacks are going to land and how they're going to work out. Let's talk about skill position players or defensive guys. Tight end Kyle Pitts. Everyone is talking about him. He was an absolute monster at his pro day. He has been blowing people away. Obviously was phenomenal in college. And guess who is intrigued? Guess who's infatuated? Someone that you hate hearing about, but you already know if he makes his mind up, he's going to make a move. It is Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones reportedly infatuated with Florida tight end Kyle Pitts. I feel like once I hear that in my mind, I already know what's happening. We're going to see Kyle Pitts in Dallas, and I don't want to see Kyle Pitts in the NFC.
Man, Kyle Pitts can play. The question with him is, okay, is he a receiver or is he a tight end?
Right.
He can play both. He has that tweener size. He's great in the red zone, good hands, decent routes, big body. Yeah, you know, Jerry, I don't root for the Cowboys ever with anything. So
are they your most hated team?
Them and the Patriots. Now, I kind of eased up on the Patriots now that Tom Brady's gone.
Okay, that's the thing I was going to ask, because I like Bill Belichick and Tom Brady more now that they're apart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They both became weirdly underdogs.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm with
you. Suddenly Bill Belichick was like that one guy that like he's kind of dirty, not in a bad way, just in a way where he cuts his own clothes a lot and you're like really rooting for him because... You know, this is kind of all he has, and it just throws his life into it. And Brady became the old guy.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, Brady, you were like, let's go, 70s babies.
Belichick became human to me
this
year.
That's what it was.
He became a human being.
Yeah.
Like, everything's not all peaches and creams for you. You're perfect. Tom Brady just became lovable to me. I'm like, oh, Tom Brady. Especially after he threw the trophy
to
boat to boat. I'm like, man, I never liked Tom Brady.
No.
I never liked him. But
until now.
Yeah, I can get with him now.
I can get behind Tom Brady stumbling out of a bar and throwing the Lombardi trophy over the bay.
They both became human.
Exactly. Next story, Justin Fields will hold a second pro day on April 14th with the 49ers expected to be in attendance. Now, as a reminder, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan attended Mac Jones's pro day on the day of Fields' original workout, prompting people to think that the duo might be preferring Mac Jones over Fields, or is it all gamesmanship bump? If you have to think, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, who would you bet, who do you put your money on, is going to be in San Francisco at pick 3?
If I'm Frisco, I'm picking Fields, man.
Yeah?
Just because of his mobility. I know Mac Jones is a good quarterback. He understands that system. And Shanahan is going to make whoever they pick a decent quarterback. But Fields just scares me because dude just ran a 4-4 as a quarterback. And that's why he's having that second pro day, because there's legit interest. His agent is talking to people, and they're like, look, we got to give these guys a chance to see this guy up close and in person. So, good move by Fields, but I think they're going to go Mac Jones. But if I'm them, I'm going with Fields.
All right, so now this requires a little bit of competition, a little bit of honesty policy here. The NFL.com has their kind of roster resets where they look at the hierarchy in each conference. Greg Rosenthal, friend of the show, listed it out for the AFC. Obviously, he's got the Chiefs and Buffalo Bills at the top. He's got the Ravens and Browns in playoffs or bust category, and then his contenders, Colts, Steelers, Chargers, Titans. Then he's got the Dolphins in there, okay, along with the Patriots, who in his mind are going to make a little bit of a comeback. Full disclosure, to put Greg Rosenthal on blast, he is a Pats fan, admitted Pats fan. Now, if you have to look over at the NFC, who is the powers that be? Who are the powers that be in the NFC?
Powers that be, you got to go with Tampa. I mean, Tampa's just reloading over there. You still got Tom Brady. He signed a deal. Still got the weapons on the outside. And then from there, I think it's a toss-up between, of course, the Seattle Seahawks. Mm-hmm. We'll see what the Rams do with Matthew Stafford over there. And then I'm just going to throw in the Green Bay Packers as well, because they still have the reigning MVP coming back. I think after that, who knows what's going to happen. There's going to be a team that shakes some things up. Is it going to be the Dallas Cowboys? Is it going to be the Atlanta Falcons? I don't know, but I don't think the Falcons actually. Let's throw them out the picture right there. Let's see what they do.
You're like,
with
wait
that.
A minute. I actually take
I'm not
all
sure
that
about
back.
That. See what they do with that number four pick. Do they use it? Do they trade it away? But, yeah, I think it's those three right now. Excuse me. Three or four. Again.
Yeah.
Tampa, Seattle, L.A., Green Bay.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think when I'm looking at the power rankings, you do wonder, you know, is this going to be a permanent shift in landscape for the New Orleans Saints, who had been one of those contenders right in that group for the same time the last, you know, however many years since Breeze was there, along like what, 15, 20?
What if Jameis Winston just changes
That's what
the
I'm
game
saying. I'm like,
there.
Okay, what if it ends up working out? I'm sorry, Taysom, it's not going to be you.
No.
Either Jameis Winston works out, or they do just enough this year to get by, or they tank and they get someone in next year. I don't think the Saints are done because Sean Payton isn't done.
Sean Payton's there, Kamara's there,
and
Michael Thomas
is
still there.
Exactly. And Sean Payton is the shark. He's going to keep it going. Those skill players aren't moving. They were at one point like 60-something million over the cap. They were not getting rid of any of those guys via trade or anything else. Those guys are locked in. They just need the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
It's Winston or bust for this year, but if Winston doesn't work out, I might be looking at tanking. I might be looking at, it's not going to make those players happy. Players are going to hate tanking, but if I've got young guys that aren't going anywhere, it is tempting. I know everyone hated Doug Peterson for doing what they felt was to spite Washington, but.
Yeah, say what you want about Winston. 5,000 yards, 30 touchdowns. I know there's 30 picks there as well, but he can throw the rock.
All right. Next story here. Now, this is a bit of an older one, but it was basically a recap of all of free agency. This one, our final one. The worst move of free agency. This was an ESPN. I believe it was Bill Barnwell. It was actually Kansas City signing Joe Tooney. Now, people had been banging their drum for Joe Tooney here, but basically he said, look, one of the kind of pitfalls of free agency is you pay a lot for guys that you wouldn't normally pay a lot for. And Joe Tooney won the bidding war of free agency. You agree?
Nah. You saw what happened in the Super Bowl. You see Pat Mahomes was running for his life. I understand that they had tackles who were out. They were on like their third stringer over there. But you have to protect the highest paid guy in the league. Is he still the highest paid guy? I believe he is.
Oh, yeah.
You got to protect this dude. And it was evident that if you do not have guys around your quarterback to allow him to see the field and go through his reads, you don't stand a chance in a league that is so pass heavy, it's ridiculous.
Yep.
So good for Tooney, man. I'm all about athletes getting their money. So good for you getting your money. I think the Chiefs made the right move by getting someone to protect their biggest asset.
All right. Here's how this is going to work. We have a game. We usually play it on Wednesdays. It's called Hype Train. We had a Mariners game this week, and so we didn't get to play it. So we're going to have you join us for this. I tell you guys the biggest trends and topics and heroes in sports this week. And you, Bump, and you, Curtis, are going to tell me whether you're on board with it or whether it's all just hype. Hype Train is next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
As a reminder for you guys, what I need to know coming up in 15 minutes, we have Michael Bumpus today. So you can send in special Michael Bumpus focus questions if you want. What I need to know is coming up in 15 minutes, 710-710. That is where you are texting your questions. So we'll give you guys some time here while we play Hype Train. So let's go ahead and jump into that right now. All right, here's how this works, Bump. Bump, a first-time player, although you've heard the segment before, but I'm going to run it through the rules right now just so everyone listening knows. I tell you guys five trends that are happening in sports. I'm going to go one by one by one. You are going to tell me whether it's all hype or whether you're boarding that train and you're buying in, and then you're going to tell me why. So here we go. Here's the first hype train. We've been talking to Kerry Hyder. We were talking about Carlos Dunlap. We were talking about the defensive line and how one of these guys is hopefully going to be leading the team in sacks. However, today's hype train, the first of five, it's actually Jamal Adams that will lead the team in sacks. Jamal Adams will improve on his sack total from a year ago when he set a record for DBs with 9.5. That is the hype train. Tell me whether you're boarding.
Set some records, 9.5 sacks. More, also, yeah. 14 tackles for loss. Amazing season. Great pickup by Jamal Adams, but he can't do that again. You can't ask this man to break another record consecutive years. I think he'll have more help. I don't think he's going to have to. So as far as jumping on that train, I'm going to let it pass and wait for the next one.
All right. Oof, bump, man. Not boarding. Letting it go by. This is the hype train, Curtis. Jamal Adams will improve on his sack total from a year ago when he got 9.5. You boarding, or is it all hype?
That is a lot of sacks a defensive end, 9.5, let alone a safety, which kind of puts into perspective how crazy Jamal Adams' season was. Only played 12 games, too, to get that sack total. The hope is that he plays a full 16. Does that mean his sack total increases? I'm going to say it does.
No! Adams is going to get 10 double-digit sacks?
I think so, but I also think he will not lead the team in sacks. I think there's going to be somebody else that steps forward here. Maybe a Kerry Hyder Jr. who we had on earlier today. Maybe Carlos Dunlap reaches 10 sacks as well. But I think Jamal Adams does improve on his sack total from a year ago, but it doesn't necessarily mean he leads the team in sacks.
If someone gets to double-digit sacks on this team and is not leading the team in sacks, that's the best defensive effort you've had since 2018 when you had Frank Clark with 14 and Jaron Reed with 10. You have not had two double-digit guys since then. I don't even think you've had a double-digit guy since then. That would be phenomenal. However, I'm not boarding this train. I don't think Jamal Adams is going to get 10. I don't think it's because he can't. He's still young. He's going to be coming back with two good shoulders instead of no good shoulders. He's going to be on the mend a full offseason with his new team, which he didn't have last year. But I think that they're going to need him in coverage a little bit more. I'm worried about the cornerback group. I think that he's going to be your most experienced and most talented defensive back, and they might need him as more of a traditional safety role rather than that kind of hybrid pass rusher safety, really unique approach he's been doing. So I don't think it's because he can't, but I think that they've got the pieces now to get those sacks without him. So I'm not boarding this train. Time for the next one. All right, the NCAA men's tourney final was not what we thought it would be. Gonzaga is just completely trounced by Baylor. Baylor taking home the crown. Gonzaga, it turns out, this is the hype train, tell me if you're boarding, was overrated all season long, and finally it was put on display during their championship loss.
Gonzaga, local team on the other side of the mountains, Eastern Washington. I spent some time in Spokane. Going to WSU. I look at their schedule. They play number 6 Kansas, then number 6 early, number 11 West Virginia, number 3 Iowa. They could have played number 2 Baylor, but that game was canceled. And as I watched this team during the season, I'm like, especially in the tournament, I'm like, this is team ball. But no one was really explosive and impressed me. And I would tell my buddies that. They're from around here. They get all upset about it. But once they played a team that has some dudes in the perimeter, great off the dribble, super explosive, they didn't look like the team we're used to seeing. So because of that, hype train. I'm jumping on the hype train. Overrated. Woo! Sorry, wow. Washington. These guys are overrated. Wow. They don't play nobody in their league. They don't play anybody. You get some preseason games, go to a tournament, you'll get a couple there. But then after that, you're playing Northwestern State, Northern Iowa, Dixie State, San Francisco, BYU. I mean, they just weren't tested. Hype train, I'm on it.
Curtis.
I am not getting there on you this go. Train. And I'm going to tell you why. Because you can say that Gonzaga is still one of the best. This 2020-2021 Gonzaga team is still one of the best we've seen in over a decade in college basketball. The same can also be said for the team that beat them on Monday night, Baylor. And I don't think what Baylor did takes away the 31 games or whatever that Gonzaga won previous to the national championship. You can still say this Gonzaga team is one of the best we have ever seen, probably the best we've ever seen in this state's college basketball history. I'm not taking anything away from what Baylor accomplished. That is one of the best teams that college basketball has really ever seen over the last at least 20 years. I'm not saying Gonzaga is overrated. I am saying that Baylor is truly one of the best teams that we've ever seen.
I'm going to take that same approach. I am also not boarding this train. That one goes by. We have time for one more here. Look, I did not think we would be here. I did not think this would be this week's hype train. But after Marco Gonzalez's last outing, here we are. Here's the hype train. Yusei Kikuchi is currently the Mariners' best pitcher. Are you boarding, Bump?
He is their best pitcher right now. I'm boarding the hype train. Paxton is gone. Marco Gonzalez is, you know, he had a couple of rough starts. Right now, it's probably Kikuchi. I think eventually Marco is going to figure this thing out. Paxton, he's done for the year. That's what it's looking like. But as of right now, today, what's today's date? Today is April 9th.
Yes.
Kikuchi, the best. I'm on it.
Curtis?
Numbers don't lie.
Yep. Nope.
Men lie. Women lie. Numbers don't lie. Yusei Kikuchi is the best pitcher on the Mariners staff right now.
That being said, then, we do have time for one more if we can squeeze one in, Curtis.
Let's do it.
Okay, here we go really, really fast. Last one here for Dodgers fan Michael Bumpus. Here it is. Trevor Bauer did nothing wrong.
He just does what everyone else does. It was wrong, but everyone else is doing it, and they don't enforce it. So be it. Yeah, it's that simple to me. We win championships in L.A. Dodgers, Lakers. Trevor Bauer, welcome to the championship club. Holla at me, Curtis.
Well, Trevor Bauer did not win a championship, okay? And he did something wrong. And the iron fist of Rob Manfred must come down with the harshest punishment possible.
Okay.
I'm just saying this because he annoys me. Trevor Bauer annoys me. Rob Manfred annoys me. So if we can get rid of one of those guys right now, we're good for it. So, yeah, I think Trevor Bauer, not as, you know, hey.
This hurts
easy
you,
to cast.
It?
It's easy to throw stones there.
Right. Okay. You know, I will say we have a regular listener who usually texts in, and they're like Dodgers fan checking in. They sign off as like Dodgers fan. I feel like they feel very seen today with Michael Bumpus on the program, LA native. So
native.
Go Dodgers on behalf of Bump and Dodgers listener. All right. What I need to know is coming up next. Here's how it works. There is a number I want you to text. The number is 710-710. Text any question you have, any question about anything into that number. We'll read it next on What I Need to Know.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
It's time for What I Need to Know, brought to you by Allred Cooling Electric Heating. Now, let's see here. We have a couple questions for Bump, especially Bump in for Jake today. Someone says, how are you on your quest for 80?
Quest for 80. I've been playing this lovely game of golf for about 10 years now. And last month, I broke 80 twice in back-to-back rounds,
nice.
Curtis Rogers.
Woo! Nice.
I told my wife, she goes, well, it's been 8 hours. How come you're not home from the golf course yet? I go, babe, I'm at the clubhouse having a great time because I just broke 80. So you might want to come pick your boy up.
Curtis, I'm going to throw this your way.
Okay.
I already know how you feel about it, but just so we can answer it, from the 206, knowing what happened with the Mets game yesterday, should the MLB expand replay to correct situations like that? You have to give a primer to.
Yeah. So Michael Conforto last night leaned into a pitch that won the game for the Mets in a walk-off, and a lot of people are kind of mad at him, like, hey, man, that would have been a strike had you not leaned in. Game would have still been playing. But baseball does not need replay expanded. The games are already going 3.5 hours. You don't need to tack on 4 or 5 extra minutes onto that. Baseball replay is fine with home runs and fair and foul, but stuff like that where it's kind of subjective in a way. You can't. There's no definitive rule on how much a guy can lean into a pitch, can't lean in. That does not need to be in replay.
All right, I have a kind of dessert-related question from the 509. What I need to know, which is better, ice cream sandwich or drumstick?
Man.
Drumstick. I love a cone, a waffle cone of any
kind. And then
you
get the little chocolate nugget at the bottom of the cone.
What about the caramel in the middle? You got to get the caramel.
The answer is drumstick, and I don't actually, upon reflection, I don't think it's that close.
No.
Now, in a pinch, if you're you know, needing a quick dessert, ice cream sandwich, not bad. You can never go wrong with an ice
cream
sandwich.
I'll never turn down an ice cream sandwich, given the choice.
You will turn down a cupcake.
Actually, what I'm going to... Okay, weird. Wow. Yeah. Next question. Sorry, we don't have time for that.
That's a sensitive subject on this show, Bum.
Let's see. When do you... Bump, we love Ursua. When do the Cougs and his coach roll compete in Pac-12?
I think he meant Coach Rolo.
Coach Rolo.
Yeah.
Okay. When I was trying to read...
When do they compete?
I got you, 808.
Pac-12, oh, man. 2-3 years. I think it's going to be a slow process. That's how it usually is for us Cougs. We typically don't get the 4- or 5-star recruits. You know, we kind of recruit locally. That's what I like about Rolo, though, is that he honed in on the state of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Leach changed the game for the Cougs, but he was kind of going everywhere, Texas, Florida, California. You got to take care of home first. I appreciate that. Give the man 2 or 3 years.
Now, 206, I want you to know that I see your comment about how umbrellas are awful and people get clowned on for wearing them, but I'm not going to recognize it. I'm not reading it because I don't agree with you, and it's my rule that I'm making. I'm not giving Bump the satisfaction of knowing someone agrees with him. Another question for Bump. From the 253, that's Chris in Enumclaw. What's your greatest accomplishment in sports? It can be high school, college, or pro.
Man, my greatest accomplishment in sports, my jersey is retired at my high school. I was the first player to get, like, Division Player of the Year. They retired my jersey number 5, so that's huge for me.
This is a very tough one. You can only pick one to keep after this year. This is from the 360. Bobby Wagner or Jamal Adams? You can only pick one.
It's hard because of the connection, but it's not when you look at age and what's going on. It's Jamal Adams.
Yep.
It's Jamal. I love Bobby, though, man. Love Bobby.
It's hard not to go Jamal, too, because if you go with all of the current context that you have, so this isn't like which is better in some kind of like devoid of any context. This is, you traded away 2 first-round picks and a 3rd-round pick. The reason that you're missing a 1st-rounder and a 3rd-rounder this year is because of Jamal Adams. Yeah, he better be here after this year.
Yep.
Let's see. This person corrects us from the 425. I'll have you know, ice cream sandwich with chocolate chip cookies as the bread is the superior ice cream choice of any kind. So
it's got that at T-Mobile Park. It's a nice spot.
In honor of DMX, what I need to know from the 206, what's your favorite DMX song?
Easy. How It's Going Down. It's more of a romantic, I guess, for DMX type song. Everyone thinks of all this hype stuff, but I heard that song. I was young. He smoothed it out, showed that a tough guy can holler at the ladies too. How It's Going Down.
All right. This one for everyone. From Christian, the 206. I need to know what type of float is your favorite. If you pick root beer, we are not friends anymore.
I don't like floats.
I don't either.
No.
Wow, I feel seen, Bump. I have never liked root beer floats, ever, 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 ever.
Wow.
Floats of any kind. I remember being in elementary school because kids love, like, Sloppy Joes, dinosaur-shaped nuggets, and root beer floats. Like, there's just kid foods.
Literally all of those things sound so good.
No, thank you. I don't like them. I don't like the way the ice cream gets crusty. I don't like that you can't really drink the soda because now it's got ice cream in it. It's gross. I'm not a fan. I don't like root beer. Thank you, Bumpus.
Jake, you're so lucky you're not here to hear this terrible food opinion that Stacey's brought forth.
No, man.
Not only do I like floats, I like root beer floats. I like cream soda floats.
Stop.
I like grape soda floats, orange soda floats. There's Coke floats, too. There's cherry Coke floats.
Awful.
No, thank you.
It's so good.
Well, grape soda float.
Yeah.
That's disrespectful.
You're disrespectful for coming up on here on my birthday. just spreading falsities about floats.
They're bad. They're bad.
No.
Oh, how about this one? We didn't get to it in Hype Train. The preferred brunch or breakfast palate, savory or sweet?
I'm going savory.
Yeah?
Like an Eggs Benny.
That means you can't choose waffles, steak. You can't choose pancakes,
yeah,
you can't cereal.
I'm going with savory.
Yeah, I'll go sweet. Yep.
I am going savory because my favorite is an Eggs Benny, but all this talk about floats, as much as I hate them, now I want something sweet.
Update from Jake, who is actually listening right now.
What up, Jake?
He says, Stacey and Bump can get the heck out of here.
Stop.
I tune in for 10 seconds to see how it's going, and this is what I'm hearing.
Jake.
I'm sorry,
Go
Jake.
Be with your family. Don't listen to Curtis's awful takes on floats. He knows nothing about dessert.
I know everything there is to know.
All right, that'll do it for us today. He is Michael Bumpus, and you're going to join us next week, right?
Next week, let's do it.
Awesome, I'm very excited. Happy birthday, Curtis.
Enjoy this one
with Brenna and the family. Jake, I know you're listening. I want you to know root beer floats are disgusting. I am Stacey Ross. That'll do it for us today. Do not go anywhere. Sports Talk continues next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.